On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, tonight's episode of the podcast is going to be another group episode. I'll have the guys introduce themselves and then we'll get going. So we'll go Ben first, John second, name, org, position in the org, and then we'll get it going, guys.
I'm Ben Chadwick. I'm going into my ninth year with the Red Sox. Most recently, last two seasons, I've been in AAA Worcester, and relevant to this podcast, from 16 to 18, I was in the rehab position with the team.
My name is John Perry, working with the Texas Rangers, going into my fourth year there. I am the rehab strength and conditioning coach here. That's what I've been doing all 4 years here.
So you guys both kind of mentioned rehab. And for anybody that's really a listener to the podcast, I had the two of you on for a rehab episode a while ago. And to be honest, it's like the highest listened to episode that I've put out still to this day. And we've been trying to line this one up, and it feels like every time we've had it lined up, something has come up, or spring training got in the way, or scheduling. You guys know how baseball goes. That's just kind of how it is. But I'm glad to finally have the two of you on and elaborate on the rehab discussion, and more specifically dive into Tommy John rehab. Obviously, it's very important and very relevant in baseball, and this is just a conversation that I think we need to have, and it'll be cool to have different perspectives from the complex and from the affiliates and everything. So first question that I have for you guys, prior to a surgery, what are you doing with a player to prepare him for post surgery success? And then I can probably add the caveat that, like, sometimes guys, you know, blow out and then they get the surgery right away, so you might not have time to prepare with them. But let's assume that you have a little bit of time with them. What are you guys doing with those players to get them ready for after surgery?
Yeah, so with the Rangers, well, usually we're pretty lucky in that our team doctor gets our TJ guys really quick. I can only think of a handful of times off the top of my head where we got the player before their surgery. And in those times, like, we hammered the lower half, hammered their healthy arm as well. Like, we just really tried to build as much as we could in those couple of weeks that we had. You know, higher volume, moderate intensity, not trying to go for like maxes or anything, more so like a GPP type phase. We really just wanted to focus on building that foundation. That way, when they came back, because after the surgery, like, you have 2 or 3 weeks where you can't even sweat. So we were trying to build as much as we could in that time frame. And that's really the focus with everything really before the surgery. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're using safety squat bars and glute hams and using hip extension and all the stuff that they can kind of do without grip, you know, you can really hammer the lower body the before and after the surgery kind of as much as you want. And I think sometimes, depending on the level of the tear, like, some of the stuff you do in a weight room, rows, presses, like, might actually, they might still have the dynamic stability to be able to do those things. And even if they're not, you might be able to put a strap on like their elbow or whatever. And you might be able to kind of keep training that arm until they actually have to go under the knife. And I think the other kind of relevant thing to not forget is like mental support. Like, these guys are probably, unless they're having a surgery for the second time, they're probably going into an area of their career they've never been before. They're going to kind of need someone who, like, if you've rehabbed that injury before, I think being able to speak from experience and wisdom of having done it before and seen how it's going to play out, and be able to talk to a guy about what to expect and kind of ease their anxiety of what's going to be a major halt on their career, I think really can go a long way with the player.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, great point there, Ben. A lot of guys have a lot of questions about that.
That was what I was going to ask, is if you guys sit down like pre-surgery or post-surgery to go over a plan with them, physical and mental, and then like who's being included in that plan when you guys are discussing that?
For us, like the talks, they really just happen organically. Like there's a lot of times where we'll just be sitting in between sets or just talking, and like they'll just pop out a question like, hey, I was thinking about this, like how is this going to work with my TJ, or how is this going to affect what I do in the future? Like all those things, they just come about naturally. There's never really been a time where we've had to like set a meeting for somebody. We haven't had yet to bring in our mental skills coaches. All these things, like I said, they just come up in the day-to-day life, because I mean that's what rehab is. Like day in, day out, it's a grind. You're just working your butts off trying to get back. So
yeah, I think kind of same for me. I think most of these conversations happen for me organically in the weight room. Guys in the middle of it, and you just start talking to them about the future, and at some point the conversation is going to happen. And likewise, I think for those guys that are overly a little more neurotic or might run into a mental hurdle, like you're hopefully reading their body language, picking up on things that may be going wrong in their life or something's off. And I think those are the scenarios where you do reach out to mental skills, your team psychologist, or whoever it is with your org, and kind of try to leverage them to kind of take care of the major issues on that part, since that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. I mean, it's been mentioned on the podcast, and I feel like every strength coach in pro ball knows that we wear a lot of different hats, and sometimes we're able to put out fires in different departments without having to go to the heads of those departments. And then sometimes it's bigger than what we're probably capable of. And in that case, you have to call in the other people. And, you know, I don't have a ton of experience rehabbing Tommy Johns or doing any sort of like long-term rehab. And obviously guys have both done it at the complex level. And I feel like it's not necessarily something like right away, like, you know, mental skills, like, hey, we're available if you need us. But at the beginning, you know, that guy might not be thinking about anything. And then, like you both alluded to, it might just pop up randomly, like, man, I'm having a tough day today. Can you help me get through this? Or, you know, it could be 3 months down the road, 6 months down the road, 9 months down the road. Like you said, John, rehab is really just a grind, and not every day is, you know, sunshine and rainbows, and it's a lot of ups and downs. And I think strength coaches being able to navigate those ups and downs and minimize, you know, the lows and the highs, and just kind of keep guys going, I think is a really valuable skill in rehab. Would you guys agree with that?
100%.
100%, even outside rehab.
yeah, I would agree. I think that skill probably carries over just even in the regular everyday. So, okay, so let's say the guy has Tommy John, successful surgery, you know, great news from the doctors, the guy's going to be okay, he's going to come back, he's going to work with you. What are the first steps that you're taking with that player in terms of setting up a plan of action? And then when does that actually go into play? I know, John, you said 2 to 3 weeks, no sweat. What does that early stage of the rehab look like for you guys?
Yeah, so to just touch on the 2 to 3 weeks, like those first couple of weeks on our end are, on the S&C wise at least, we don't really do much at all. Like that's the time to really like build a relationship with the player, because everything they're doing, like they're working extensively with our PT and our ATC, like just trying to limit any sort of swelling they got going on, reduce any inflammation, like all that stuff, getting their elbow to an acceptable range of motion during that time. And that's usually when, you know, talking to them, those conversations happen, and players like, hey, what is it looking like? And that's like, that happens naturally also. And then I'll say, you know, this is what we'll do week 3. Like we'll start a circuit type lift where we do squats, split squats, lunges, pretty much anything you can think of, lower half. We start that with just body weight with them. There is an eccentric focus on every rep. And we're really just going back to building the foundation again. You know, 3 sets of 10 one day, we build up, add another set the next day, 4 sets of 10, build it all the way through. We include their healthy arm also. A lot of cable pressing, dumbbell pressing, rows. Again, anything you can do with the healthy arm, I try to do it as much as I can, because that's going to be the arm that's going to be trained for the first, you know, 16 weeks. mean, we don't touch the right arm, and we don't touch the Tommy John arm until 16 weeks into their process. So week three, as soon as they're cleared to sweat, the incision's all closed up, we start getting after it. Start out circuit style, like I said, and then we add resistance from there. You know, progressive overload at its finest.
Yeah, so step one for me is almost like step zero. I think it's before you even see the player, I think getting on the same page as your PT is one of the most important things you can do, and also looking at the protocol. So there's a few different variations of Tommy John surgery, and the rehab procedure protocols can vary quite a bit, whether it's Andrews or Elitrosh or Alchek. Like starting light range of motion and like when you can sweat and when you can start doing different things can be quite a difference, depending on which one you're doing. And you know, just starting there and making sure you're on the same page, not doing anything you're not supposed to, but also starting things as soon as a guy is able so that they feel like they're making forward progress. For me is block step zero, block one.
Ben, you bring up the protocols. So anybody that's listening that's not in professional baseball, or even if they are and they're just not certain, when a guy has Tommy John, is the org providing a set protocol? Is it coming from the doc, from the surgeon who does the surgery? Like how is that being differentiated?
So usually that'll come from the surgeon. Based on whether they had a bracing procedure or whether they had to drill into the bone, or depending on the type of the Tommy John, affects when the PT can start doing their light range of motion, and that kind of speeds up or slows it. Generally, the long term is about the same with all of them, besides the newer bracing procedure that just kind of recently came out last few years. But those are dictated by the surgeon.
Okay. I gotcha. So, all right, this is going to be like the nuts and bolts here. So I really want to dive deep into this. And as much as you guys are willing to share, let's talk about it. I want to get into what the calendar looks like for each player. And I know it's individual, but a general sense of upper body training, lower body training, and then throwing progression. So I'm going to talk as minimal as I can other than just to guide this, but the floor is yours, guys. Like let's open it up here.
So I'll start with upper body. Honestly, my approach to all rehabs in general is kind of think about all the patterns that they have, think about which ones are affected by their injury and where their strength or capabilities are now, and how do we get them back to their baseline or past that by the end of this rehab. So obviously with a Tommy John, things like pressing and pulling are going to be the most affected things, and you need to rebuild strength there before you can progress into more dynamic or plyometric things that ultimately lead to throwing. So for me, John already brought this up, training the opposite side as much as you can early in the rehab, it will lead to cross transfer and they'll come back stronger and neurologically faster just from having kept the pattern going throughout the early part of the rehab on the opposite side. And then I think something I used to do was a few weeks before they were cleared to really start doing strength work on the affected side. I used to label it like a motor control phase. It would consist of like almost having no dumbbell or light 5, 10, 15, start going through like a rowing pattern for, you know, higher reps, going through a pressing pattern for higher reps. Just being able to do wall slides, kind of training the patterns as much as you can, and try to start prepping the body to get ready to start adding load again. And then you can use different markers there. Asking a guy, where was your strength at before this? Checking your internal database to see, you know, if you have any testing metrics relative to upper body, and seeing what are his baselines and how much more work do we need to do to get him there. And those can be things you dictate to know when, in addition to the protocols, to know when to start doing plyometrics and when a guy truly is ready to start throwing. Because even if a protocol says week 16, week 20, whatever it is, a guy might be, you know, a little different based off like who he is individually as a person.
Right. So what we do with the Rangers is we start off training upper body, like I mentioned earlier, the non-injured side as soon as possible, preferably week three, week four with them. And generally speaking, like Ben talked about earlier, there are these different types of UCL surgeries that we have now, all different sort of TJ surgeries that we have. But generally speaking, we have 52 to 55 weeks to work with. So we're going to try to train the healthy arm as soon as possible. And it's exactly what Ben said, because of the cross-training effect. We will train rows, presses, you know, dumbbell bench press, dumbbell incline press, floor press, everything with the healthy arm. And we will usually, we'll progressively overload it. We'll start out sort of like block periodization with it, 4 sets of 8 or 10, depending on what the player needs. Like if he's a guy who needs to gain weight, obviously we're going to have higher volumes, and we'll just work our ways down from hypertrophy to strength to a little bit of power with the healthy arm. Once we get, generally speaking, to week 16, then we will start training the TJ arm in the weight room. We have a great PT here. He works with them right around week 12, week 13. He'll introduce dumbbell bench, dumbbell floor press, rows. He'll introduce those things to them with very light weight. That way we can sort of make the transition process as seamless as possible. You know, he works them all the way up to 40 pounds on the PT side. And then when he's cleared on that, then he comes over to the weight room. And we have grip restrictions on everything that he does, you know, whether it's dumbbell bench row, anything that you can justify having in your program and that's safe. We have grip restrictions for all of that just to help minimize any error that can happen. We've been very successful with that as well. Sometimes it's to a fault because the player, like you can, as you're watching him and as you're coaching him, you can see that he's dominating. Like he's doing a 60 pound dumbbell bench for 4 sets of 8 on his TJ arm and he's crushing it. You know, we've had a lot of guys who have sort of been a little pushy to add more weight because it's easy for them. The volume's not too much for them. And it's because of that cross training effect. You know, they want to do more. So there's been a lot of times where we've had to pull the reins on guys to help hold them back. And then once we get to week 24 with them, we are pretty much full go. You know, we will carry over to bilateral training. Whereas before, let me back up. Before, we'll do unilateral, like we'll do single arm dumbbell bench. Say it's their left arm that's healthy, they'll just crush that 4 sets of 5, building up in intensity, building up in weight to a heavy set of 5 on their last set. However, with the grip restriction, they're going to be held back and they're going to do 4 sets of 8 or 4 sets of 6, whatever, wherever they're at sort of determines that, wherever they're at in the protocol sort of determines that. So they may be doing hundreds with their healthy arm, whereas on their TJ arm, they may be doing 60s. So the reins get, or everything gets taken off on week 24, they're full go. And that's when we start treating them as if they're a healthy pitcher again. Granted, they have throwing program and everything, but in the weight room wise, we treat them as if they're healthy guys again.
And something you kind of just reminded me of, two things kind of came to mind. One being something you need to take into account unique to a Tommy John surgery is that unilateral phase is going to be so long that, you know, you're doing a lot of one arm benches, a lot of rows just on one side. You know, I look at exercises like that as kind of like a mega anti-rotation press, like over and over and over again. So I've kind of saw a few guys kind of almost get too strong rotary stability on one side, and it naturally is going to start getting neglected on the other just because you can't really train it. Yeah. So like thinking about that and not trying to dose too much on the other side, I think is something important. So you don't run into, again, a rotary stability or some sort of back issue like with that guy. And the other thing is like like I said, with that like motor control phase or right when you start getting back into it, like I'd start at like one or two sets of 20, 15 with weight that's so light. And I'd try to get ahead of it with the guy saying, hey, like the first week or two might feel a little eyewash, but this is part of the plan. This is for motor control. Like we're going to throw brakes on you. We're going to have the reins on you a little bit. But letting them know, hey, this is coming and we can't push it too fast in the beginning and we're going to go as fast as you can go. And we can't throw before a certain week anyway. So like, this is what to expect. And we do have time to play with. So don't freak out and, you know, don't feel like we're treating you like a little kid, but this is kind of how it needs to be at least early on.
Yeah, 100%. And those guys, I mean, I think we've all experienced it with having good relationships with our players. Like if you just talk to them and you lay it out, just like you said, like, yeah, we're kind of holding you back a little bit, but right now, like this is where we're going. Like you need to have eyes on the prize sort of deal. Like it's not about today's lift. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that guys always, almost always understand. So good point.
And then Chris, you brought up the lower body portion of this too. You know, you usually get like, you'll get a cluster of like upper body injury guys that you can kind of put together and kind of make them training partners depending on when their rehabs are and when they come into the weight room. But I remember particularly in 2018, I had a few Tommy Johns and a shoulder guy and they kind of all stuck together. And especially on lower body day, like upper body day, they might be weeks, months apart from each other. But in terms of training the lower body, like if you use a safety squat bar the right way and get creative with all the other lifts, like those guys can really get after it, work hard and kind of get a training effect for a while. So finding creative templates, we used to rotate like a meaty hypertrophy day with like a more strength day with like a speed power day. And it was like two or three times a week they'd come in, like hit those. And like those are days that can really keep them going. Like just doing like a ton of like a field lap of lunges, like just things that are maybe more mentally challenging. Like there's a lot of ways you can really get creative throughout this and kind of like transform a guy for when he comes back.
No doubt. We use a lot of gym wear here and I love when we have guys who are sort of in the same area of their program, like then they just compete like crazy. It doesn't matter if they're going for say like 0.5 on safety bar squat or if they're going for 1.0, like it seems like there's almost always two to three guys who are close enough in their program where we can just like all get them on the same rack and they can all compete and they just get after. Like that's when it gets rowdy real quick.
I think even the guys that aren't that close in strength, I think just the environment of training partners and other people going through the same thing they're going, being able to lift with them at the same time can really like even subconsciously like really help a guy through the rehab.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
I feel a little less isolated through the process.
For sure. I've seen where guys like they understand like the further, because TJ guys, like it's always a revolving door. Like there's always somebody who's in month 11, month 12 and now he's watching a guy who's in month 3. Like they understand and like they know what the guy's going through. And I've seen it where players will literally cheer on dudes who are going through, like say they're just grinding out a strength block. They will literally cheer them on as they're going through. Like it's not just the, you know, you do your lift, I'll do my lift type of deal. Like these dudes really, they cheer each other on, they get after it together. Like it's really great environment to have for a lot of the TJ guys.
And those guys kind of become an extension of your mental skill staff too, because, you know, they're going to go to the mental skills and they're going to come to us. They're going to go to the ATs to vent and, you know, talk about their life and, you know, search for kind of order and the chaos that's been thrown at them. But something you can't take for granted is that guy that's in month 11 talking to that guy in month 2, especially when it's an older guy that's like later in the rehab, kind of being able to tell him what to expect. And realistically, they can have the most empathy and relate to them the most because they're the ones missing the time too. So I think you don't even have to use them. It just happens organically. Like those guys helping each other out is huge for the process.
Yeah. Plus those guys, like luckily we've been fortunate enough where there's always seems to be there's an older guy, you know, double A, triple A, even big guys with big league time have been with us down here. And, you know, like you say, like people, sometimes the younger guys, they just want a sounding board off of the older guys. Like they just want to know, like, is this normal what I'm going through? Like, is this okay? And they just want to hear that. They almost want to be mentored a little bit. You know, I don't think they really say it like that, but that's from afar, that's how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, like I said, I don't have a ton of experience with rehab. It's not a strong suit of mine. It's not something I like actively pursue, probably to a fault sometimes. But I will say during spring training this past year, obviously we added the assistants. So we had a ton of coverage at all of the fields. And there were points where I had some downtime in the day and I would just go help Jeff, our current rehab guy. And like that group over there just always looked like they were having fun. And like, even despite being injured, and, you know, not necessarily having like the end point of when they were going to play be anytime soon, like it always just looked like they were enjoying each other's company. And it would like attract me over to them. And then I'd just pop in and be like, hey, what are you guys doing? Like, how's everything going? You need any help? And they're like, dude, we're getting after it over here. And then, like you guys said, you look lower body day, guys got, you know, four plates on each side doing split squats. And you're like, dude, you're a freak. Like it just seems like a good environment. And making the most out of like to be honest, a really bad situation, a really unfortunate situation. I think like you guys said, because it's a revolving door and because it's such a long rehab, there's always guys at different stages that the other guys can kind of lean on and talk to. And again, they can come to us, they can go to the ATs, they can go to mental skills, but you both hit it, I think, right on the head of just, there's nothing more valuable than gaining information and experience from other guys and other players that have already been there and done that. And I think it's really, really valuable. And I do think part of the culture and the environment comes from the strength coaches, just, you know, pushing guys and holding guys accountable and keeping people in line. So kudos to you guys. I always love going over and just talking with the rehab guys, especially some of the younger kids that aren't, you know, big league guys yet. They're low A guys or high A, whatever it is that I haven't met or just I don't really know much about them. Just getting to know them and just offering, hey, if I can help you in any way, like I know I'm on the big league side, but you know, if you need somebody to talk to, I can figure something out for you. Just, I think it's just a really good environment for those guys and it's fun to watch them grow. And then ultimately, you know, they get to the end and they get back in the games and it's a lot of hard work for a lot of people. It's got to be really, really rewarding to just see them like work through those phases and work through those difficult times just to get back on the field.
Yeah. And I really think aside from the X's and O's, just the better environment, the more competitive, the more fun you can keep things for them, especially some of these guys are going to be with you for a year, year and a half. Like that's a long time. Like you need to do things to keep them engaged that might not be something you read in a book that are still important to kind of keep the environment fresh and keep them going day to day so they don't get burnt out at just going in and sitting on a table all day.
Oh yeah.
The weight room truly becomes their escape at points throughout the rehab. So
for sure.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of this two-part episode with John and Ben. I hope you enjoyed this one. As I mentioned in the episode, this is long overdue, both in the general sense of, you know, discussing Tommy John surgery and rehab on the podcast, but also more specifically having Ben and John on as a group episode, their first episode together, where we went over general concepts and principles of rehab and the rehab process was really, really well received. And so I wanted to have them back on to discuss more specifically the rehab process with Tommy John. And it's been quite a road to get them on and get us all on the same schedule. But I'm really glad that we were able to. And I think there was a ton of good information in this part. And I know there will be a ton of good information in part two as well. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode: help ease anxiety early in the process by talking with the player about expectations and the long-term progression. Know the specifics of the rehab protocol prior to beginning the work with your athlete and utilize the cross-training effect to your advantage while rehabbing players coming off of a surgery. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode and we'll talk to you again on the next one.